And all of a sudden, I won my first Boston Marathon and broke the world record by almost 7 minutes. He had influence not only athletically, but personally, and just building up that inner strength and that vision for what my life could be beyond athletics. He was a very influential figure in my life.
For those with disabilities, competitive collegiate athletics is just as rewarding as for their able-bodied counterparts, where a sense of family, team, and acceptance can be found among their fellow athletes.
Last year, we started this thing called the Ultimate Basketball Challenge, where after the basketball season for able-bodied and wheelchair is over, we get together for a game where the able-bodied men's and women's basketball teams sit down in wheelchairs and they play a game with us. And, you know, that opened a lot of their eyes to what exactly it is we're doing. And all of them loved it. I think every single basketball player that participated in it had a blast. It's just kind of cool to have that connection.
My first international event was in Stoke Mandeville in Great Britain. We got there for a basketball tournament. It's my first basketball tournament internationally ever. So we got to the athlete's village, and I immediately went and found the gym so I could start shooting around. And I'm shooting around, and then a guy from Jordan came in, and he asked if he could shoot with me. Didn't know a lot of English, but he started shooting around. Then a guy from Greece came in, and a guy from Turkey, and a guy from France and the Netherlands. All of a sudden, we had 10 guys there, all from different countries, but we started playing a pickup basketball game.
However, all too often, people with disabilities have not been given the recognition or help they deserve from the National Collegiate Athletic Association. Because of this lack of institutional support, these athletes have often had to find their own opportunities and funding to continue their athletic careers.
I paid for probably my first 5 international trips to coach, so I paid to go work 80-hour work weeks, 3 weeks in a row in Great Britain. I think I paid for my first Paralympic coaching experience. In this country, a lot of the money goes towards persons with mental incapacities as opposed to persons with physical disabilities. And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have the able-bodied athletes, and that's where the corporations come in and they put their money into it. So we sort of fall right in the middle. Sometimes we get the hand-me-downs from Team USA, the able-bodied teams, or we paid our own way. Even now, it's not unusual for our teams to go on international trips and be told that they need to raise $2,500 before they can go.
The two instances I always remember at the Paralympics that remind me of the weaknesses of the areas that we still got to grow in. I remember being in Atlanta for the Paralympics in 1996. And I remember going on to the athlete's village and seeing that one of the booths outside the village, a McDonald's, was being torn down. McDonald's was a sponsor of the Olympics that year. And I got onto the village and I asked one of the people, I said, what's the deal here with McDonald's? They're tearing their stuff down. We've still got another event. One of the people told me that McDonald's did not want to have anything to do with the Paralympics, but would not let another fast food company come on board to sponsor the Paralympics. You know, it wasn't quite good enough for McDonald's to spend money on, but they didn't want anybody else to be able to support it. Then in Athens in 2004, the lady that was largely responsible for the Olympics and Paralympics was planning to run for political office. She wanted to use the Olympics as her platform, but she didn't want to be associated with the Paralympics because she didn't want to be tied to the Paralympics and disability. And so you still see, even at the very highest levels, they see difference in people with disabilities, and they see it as a negative thing. They don't see the ability.
Since the disability rights movement in the late 1980s and passage of the Americans with Disabilities Act in 1990, many things have improved in the U.S. However, improvements are still needed for there to be equal opportunities, and many misconceptions still exist about people with disabilities. Athletics can be a bridge to understanding.
The first thing I'd like to see us grow towards is having the same kinds of competitive opportunities for student athletes with disabilities as their peers have. As an example, at the high school level, I'd like to see a high school wheelchair basketball throughout the state of Illinois. I'd like to see the same thing happen at the college level, where instead of there being, say, 10 wheelchair basketball teams around the country on the men's side and 3 on the women's side, I'd like to see there be 50. I'd like to see that happen because there's so much that I've learned from my involvement in wheelchair sports. And I know that those same things can be of benefit to other people with disabilities. And I know that there are kids out there that, if given the opportunity to play wheelchair basketball, would do it in a heartbeat and would benefit as I've benefited, or even more greatly.
A lot of people aren't sure or aren't aware of the fact that if you have a disability, there still are a lot of things that you can do. People with disabilities can be independent. People with disabilities can be intelligent. People with disabilities can do all sorts of things that sometimes people don't realize they can do. And so one of the roles that I have embraced as a person with a disability, but also a public figure, is the opportunity to educate about disability. In my mind, walking is overrated. I think that walking is really handy, but it's not the only way to get around in life.
What's interesting about sport and disability, when you look at the two of them, sport is all about physical ability. And our idea of people who are athletes, we always say they're physically the best. And what's neat about sport for people with disabilities is that most often when we look at a person with a disability, we don't see them as being physical anymore. For me, at least, what was neat about wheelchair basketball is it showed that I could still be physical. While part of me doesn't work, my legs don't work in the same way that they used to. I don't have control over them. It showed that I still have muscles that can be used. I still have a physical component to myself. When I learned these things as I was growing, and what I've seen in the student athletes that I've worked with, is that they start to recognize that physical side of themselves. They learn that they can be great wheelchair basketball players, and they begin to think, hey, I wonder if I can also be a great student, or a great mom, or a great dad, or a great teacher, great lawyer. It sparks that self-confidence in them, and I think other people, when they see our student athletes, it begins to change the way they view people who are just walking around or who have some kind of a difference.
The U of I has come a long way since its programs for people with disabilities began in the 1950s.
Over the years, we have definitely grown. I've sat down and I've talked with Dr. Nugent, the founder of our program, and he'll talk about there was no money in the program at all for any scholarships or any travel or anything. The players in the early teams back in the late 40s and early 50s, they used their own personal vehicles to drive to games. They used their own gas money. So we've come a long, long ways since that time. We weren't allowed to use the name Fighting Illini for many of the early years. Our student athletes can receive varsity letters for their athletic accomplishments. They can receive the Huff Award for their academic achievements as varsity athletes. We travel on a charter bus now instead of using our own personal vehicles. We have some financial assistance we can help our athletes with now. There's still a long way to go. We're not fully recognized and treated as the other varsity athletes on campus. That's the next thing we want to do, is really work towards that.
The future for people with disabilities appears bright. Negative attitudes are changing, and in the words of Jean Driscoll, many people now see that having a disability isn't an inability.
I think the first thing that people do when they see a person in a wheelchair is they think, oh, this person can't walk, that a person can't do. And I think what's neat when you look at our student athletes is when you start watching them play wheelchair basketball and you see the phenomenal athleticism that they have and the skill that they've got, you stop thinking about what they can't do and you're just remarking at what they can do and the phenomenal ability. We've got kids that'll go out and they'll shoot 60% from the three-point line in wheelchair basketball. It's the same shot that Trent Meacham's taken, you know, same shot that Lori Bjork's taken on the women's team. I'd like to see people look and say, wow, I know that Steve Cirio, one of our wheelchair basketball players, I know he's in a chair and that's really different, but look at how good he is at shooting threes. Then the next time that person who's maybe come and seen one of our games does is when they're in, say, the mall, they're walking along, they see somebody in a wheelchair, they don't think that person can't go upstairs. They think, I wonder if that person plays wheelchair basketball. I wonder if they can shoot basket. I wonder what else they can do. And imagine if we can get society to look at all people and see and acknowledge difference as being a positive thing and focus on the abilities so that we value people on the merits of their character, their principles, their values, and their skills, and not on the negative things.
Although these interviewees have come from different backgrounds, their passion for sports binds them together. These athletes have experienced a great deal of trials and hardships throughout their careers and have learned and grown from them, becoming motivated, disciplined, and self-confident.
You learn how to deal with adversity through sports. You know, I broke my collarbone. That was a setback. I was cut from basketball, and that's definitely humiliating. It messes with your self-esteem. Overcoming that adversity teaches how to be a team player, how to care more about the team than you do yourself. Teaches you how to handle success, teaches you humility, that, you know, just because you win and you're the best doesn't mean you necessarily have to go around bragging about it. You learn how to meet people. You learn how to bond with people quickly. You know, learn how to accept people for their differences. You know, some of my best friends have all come through sports. You learn how to be confrontational. You can't be on a good team and not be willing to jump a teammate's case that they're not doing their job. So I learned so much through athletics.
I think they teach you to make decisions. They enhance your horizon about how to evaluate what your environment is like and what's going to work for you and what's not. I think that ethics are learned in sport. I think self-discipline, commitment, learning to be involved in the pursuit of excellence. I think all of those things can be derived and learned in the realm of sport.
My advice would be to not expect to put in anything less than a lot of hard work. Being a student athlete is challenging, and so if it's something that you're looking to do, you really have to step back and ask yourself, do I really love competing athletically this much? Am I really willing to give up some different opportunities so that I could create other opportunities for myself in sports?
So what lessons can we learn about the struggles for equality in athletics?
When I was coming along, one of the things that was always important to me is I looked around the people that I had in education and that I had in college and so forth. Those people were at the same place for a long time, and I think that's a dimension that doesn't happen quite so much today. But I wanted to be somewhere long enough to make a difference. That's one reason why I stayed at Illinois for 36 years. The second thing is that I think to make a difference and want to make a difference is very, very important if you want to be a leader. Because a lot of people don't want to take risks. And I think one of the things that you need to do is to learn how to take risks and also to make decisions.
I heard a comedian say this the other day, and I think this is a lot of the way that I've lived my life, is that he said, you know, because he was a comedian, he said that every situation he got into, the first thing he thought about was, how could I make this a great story? Now, it wasn't just that if you met the president, you'd go, yeah, meet the president. But, you know, could I step on his foot? I mean, how could I make it like a better story? And so to this day, you're actually hunting out, how could this be a great story?
Most collegiate athletes will never become a professional, but many do continue their involvement in sports. Jeanne Driscoll, who is now retired from wheelchair racing, continues to share her experiences through motivational speaking, inspiring others to look high and dream big.
I've had the opportunity to influence everybody on the platform. It's incredible. I could have never scripted that I would win 8 Boston Marathons and 2 Olympic medals, and people invite me to come and speak, you know, in front of audiences of 8,000 or 8. I love being able to speak to people and help them recognize that the biggest limitations are the ones they place on themselves or the ones they allow others to place on them. I love being able to help them dream big. That is my life motto. Dream big and work hard. You have to see yourself doing big things. You have to see your name in marquee lights. I use that as an analogy, but if you don't see it, you're not going to shoot that high. Heck, I tell people shoot even higher than that. I've received many emails, many letters, and I get really kind feedback from people who have talked about what they've learned. And if I can take life lessons that I've learned and pass them on before people have to learn things the hard way, then I enjoy that.
May our love forever be true while we're marching along life's pathway. May the spirit of old Illinois keep us marching and singing with you, and my spirit for our dear old Illinois.
We hope you enjoyed Competing Against Discrimination, Achieving Equality in Athletics at the University of Illinois. This program was produced by University Laboratory High School students Catherine Allen, Catherine Floes, Sheila Gogola, Yuyang Gu, and Adam Joseph. The executive producers are Maria Gao and Anne Macheski.
Hail to the orange, hail to the blue. Hail, alma mater. Ever so true, so true. We love no other, so let our motto be victory.
Interviews were conducted by the 2011 University Laboratory High School sub-freshman class. Stories were contributed by Ted Beach, Becky Beach, J.C. Caroline, Tony Clements, Jean Driscoll, and Jolly Forber Pratt, Michael Frogley, Joshua George, Carol Kars, Kathy Kaler, Gia Lewis, Marty Morris, Janet Rayfield, Clarence Shelley, Sean Wax, and William Williams. For more information on this project, please visit our website at will.illinois.edu.
This program was directed by Dave Dickey of AM 580 and University Laboratory High School teacher Janet Morford. I'm Anne Macheski.
And I'm Maria Gao.